In safe hands, safeguarding conversations with the head teacher coach. Welcome to In Safe Hands, safeguarding conversations with the head teacher coach, hosted by Carl Lewis, Warwickshire County Council's head teacher coach for safeguarding. Each month, a different theme will be covered to complement the information sent out to education settings, but the topics may also be of interest to other professionals. This podcast shares some of the work the council is doing to keep children safe in Warwickshire, talking to passionate people about what they do to generate discussion and dialogue around good practice and how to support colleagues, families and young people. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to In Safe Hands, our podcast for Warwickshire Children's Services. My name is Carl Lewis and I'm the head teacher coach for Warwickshire. Today's guests in our series of safeguarding related podcasts, we welcome Jeff Thomas, Bogdan Ferranda and Delroy Madden. In this episode, we're going to be talking today about the subject of equality, diversity, racism and hate crime. So let's find out some more about my guests this week. Can you tell us your names and a little bit about your roles, please? Jeff, over to you.
Thanks, Carl. My name's Jeff Thomas. I work as the Prevent Officer at Warwickshire County Council. In that role, I am responsible for promoting awareness and understanding of the Prevent duty from 2015, really addressing the issues of people engaging with violent extremism driven by a hate-filled ideology and narrative. And in that role, I am responsible for supporting local partnerships not just with schools, but with communities, health, probation and other statutory partners, as well as supporting vulnerable individuals who may have encountered extremism. And we work with them to safeguard them from getting into either criminal or harmful situations. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Bogdan, over to you.
Hi, hello Carl. So my name is Bogdan Ferranda. I am the current Community Safety Project Manager at Welsh County Council. And my key role is to kind of raise awareness of hate crime across the county and work together with partner agencies and schools as well to develop processes of tackling hate crime across the county and in schools as well. Previously, in my last 4 years, I've been working as a business crime advisor in the same team, also touching on hate crime elements in that role as well.
Thanks very much. And welcome to you, Delroy. Tell us a little bit about your role, if you will. Thanks.
Thank you, Carl. Hi, everybody. My name is Delroy Madden. I am part of the diversity and wellbeing team. Currently, I'm predominantly working with the children and family service here in Warwickshire. The main focus of my work has been, involves supporting staff to embed cultural competency into their work and also an anti-racist work practice across the children and family service currently here at Warwickshire.
Thanks to you all for sharing that. So our theme in Warwickshire, what we're trying to do is to have a theme every month. And we've mentioned our theme being equality, diversity, racism and hate crime. And this month has included Hate Crime Awareness Week. And we've been doing a number of forums on that theme. And we're also moving on and covering things like anti-bullying as well. And indeed, exclusions and behaviour and all of those topics will crop up throughout the year. So what do you think are the challenges facing Warwickshire around this subject at the moment, equality and diversity and hate crime? What do you think are the current challenges? If I can come to you first, Jeff, what do you think the current challenges are for Warwickshire?
I think I've been particularly struck in the last 3 years about the shift in exposure to hate-driven radicalisation to an online environment. It has really moved considerably over the last 5 years from in-person encountering with hate-based groupings and radicalisation experiences to something that's more online. The platforms are diversifying, So it's not just about Facebook or Instagram, YouTube. Actually, there are far more platforms, whether it be Gab, Discord, 4chan, 8chan, and online gaming has created a landscape where people can start at one point in terms of perhaps an inquiry about COVID. Where's COVID come from? And through that mushrooming of conspiracy theories, they can find themselves progressing on a conveyor belt into more and more extreme, ideologically driven narratives. And related to that, I've encountered far more youth-on-youth radicalization. So we're not talking about shadowy groups of kind of older individuals radicalizing one another. We're talking about young people with all of those skills on social media being active in creating content and driven by a desire to have an impact on other young people. And what that's meant to me, what I see, is a younger and younger age group being exposed to hate-filled narratives online and, in some cases, criminalizing themselves or projecting that hate towards others, which kind of has all of those kind of consequences for other people. But I don't want to give the perception that somehow it's all migrated online. In my daily work, what I'm seeing is a physical presence of really concerning groups across Warwickshire. I've seen references to Combat 18, an extremist, violent-based organisation, to the Hundred Handers, a shadowy group, possibly not that large, but delivering material about the Great Replacement. The Great Replacement, a theory that legitimates the idea of white genocide that in turn triggers a call for action, and that Brenton Tarrant was linked to in that attack on those mosques in 2019. I've seen Patriotic Alternative. In fact, had a leaflet myself. I'm Warwickshire resident. PA would leaflet in me as part of a kind of Warwickshire drive to their campaign. Mm-hmm. And Blood and Honour, a music scene. So we know these hardcore elements are active in the county. Perhaps not in huge numbers, but let's be real. There are, while Warwickshire is a great place to kind of live, work, visit, actually we do have challenges around extremists trying to manipulate vulnerable individuals to think ill of others. And at its core, the big message, Carla, that I have, is it's not about a drive for a particular ideology. It's recognizing over the last 3 years, we've seen this expansion in vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. The vulnerabilities of people who've been isolated, abstaining too long online, who feel maybe frustrated, angry, depressed, and who have become fixated with a worldview that legitimates harm to others because of a grievance they have. So those are some of the challenges I think we're facing. I think they may correspond to some of the experience of Bogdan and Delroy, I hope they would.
Thanks, Jeff. I mean, we've been through some difficult times with COVID, people being isolated, mental health challenges. And as you say, you know, people online, there's children who are out of school excluded and they have access to online devices now. So that makes that risk great. And then the economy at this current time is in a challenging place, which can add to it as well. Thanks very much. Bogdan, what's your take on the challenges for Warwickshire at the moment?
Yeah, no, that's
sounds quite scary, doesn't it? But, you know, what's your thoughts?
Some interesting conversations here. Just to add on what Jeff has provided, and also you were right, Carl, with the current economic climate. I think we're all aware that the cost of living has increased, and this kind of subsequently leads to challenges across members of the public. So we've got an increase in shoplifting offences, in making off without payments. We have an increase in pretty much all of the kind of crime areas slightly compared with pre-COVID. However, those elements do have a hate crime links to it. However, these are rarely reported as a hate incident or hate crime as well. And this is one of the gaps that we have identified across the county, is the awareness raising and reporting that we will need to focus in the next couple of months to work on. Obviously, Warwickshire, it is a safe place to live and work, and we are happy that we're a small county, and we do have support from neighbouring forces as well and local authorities, and we want to make the most of it and bridge those gaps and partnerships to kind of create kind of a more safer environment, people to understand more about hate crime, to raise awareness within schools, within different communities. So engaging with various communities through partnership working, this is something that we're going to focus in the next couple of months to kind of get the true picture. If I'm just looking at the stats just quickly, we have just over 1,500 reports of hate crime each year. And this is kind of steady across previous years as well. But this is just the tip of the iceberg. This is just a fraction of the reality that we're facing. And this is what we're trying to achieve, is to have a real picture of hate crime and then tackle it accordingly.
Okay, thanks. I mean, as you say, you know, the awareness is one thing, and then reporting it is an important part of what we're trying to do here, because we know that there's different areas that report more readily than others, and trying to get that consistency as well. Thanks very much, Bogdan. Delroy, can you tell us a little bit about your perception of the challenges we're facing in Warwickshire or on the wider front at the moment?
There's two main things that have stood out to me in the just over a year that I've been here at Warwickshire. I was kind of commissioned to have a look at the Children and Families Service and see how we could improve things in terms of cultural competency and anti-racist practice. So the first thing I did was have a look at the actual children and families side, so that the clients and the residents of Warwickshire, and how we can better serve them. And one of the first things that jumped out to me, and this tends to be a similar story across all local authorities, so it isn't just specific in this case to Warwickshire, that there is a lack of knowledge in terms of lived experience of minority groups, in terms of the parenting style that exists in these communities, the attachment styles, the compositions of the families, and understanding their perception of statutory services that we provide. This perception that these communities have, this has a direct impact on the uptake of services. So it's really important for practitioners and professionals such as ourselves that engage with these people to really understand what their experience or lived experience has been like. There's tools that we can use, such as genograms, which will chart the different family compositions that exist in different ethnic groups. For example, some families may have a patriarchal focus, or some may have a matriarchal focus, which then will really feed in to you getting a better understanding of the dynamics of these families. And there is then a direct link into how many children from those families may end up in the care system. And a lot of times this can come down to the way that we are assessing these families and not having a better understanding of the nuances that exist within these communities. In terms of lack of knowledge, I noticed that there was a gaps in knowledge in things such as faith and honour abuse, which can exist in these communities, and practitioners being unsure how to approach these types of conversations, which can lead to blind spots, it can lead to difficult conversations, and it can ultimately lead us to children or people slipping under the radar. In terms of the way that we record data as well, there were gaps in detail of recording, and there seemed to be a lack of understanding about things like the difference between nationality and ethnicity in the way that we're capturing the data of people. If we you're not capturing the data properly, then it's going to be really difficult for us to demonstrate that we are supporting the cultural needs, for instance, of our children that are in care. So attention to detail, and that would look like capturing subculture details correctly. In a lot of instances, there's cases where the recording generally was very good, but in some cases you would see quite broad strokes in terms of the way data was captured. And for instance, if somebody had been recorded as being Christian, that's quite a broad stroke. There's lots of different types of Christianity. And for instance, if you are from a Caribbean or African background, you're very likely to be an evangelical Christian, which is very different to how an Anglican Christian may worship. So the support needs of these children may need to be adjusted and may need to be different. So attention to detail like that can go a long way to ensuring that we are supporting the children and families in our care. The other aspect which stood out to me, or another aspect that I approached the needs of Warwickshire, was in terms of the staff, and to be specific, that the staff that come from an ethnically minority black background, whether that is South Asian or whether that's an African or Caribbean heritage. I held quite a few consultations and some informal chats with people across the Children and Family Service, and it was a constant thread of comments that came back to me, and they primarily revolved around experiences of microaggressions or instances of not feeling properly supported to fulfil their roles. Some cases, unfortunately, there was cases of overt racism. And one thing that really stood out to me was a lot of people felt that they had to compartmentalize their cultural behaviors for a fear of being perceived as being non-professional. And ultimately what that means is that you can't bring your authentic self to the workplace if you're having to compartmentalize your normal cultural behaviors. It really inhibits the way that you bond with your staff and bond with your team. And ultimately, if you don't feel part of your team, it's going to really impact what your output is and the quality of your work if you don't feel that you have been accepted. So again, there were a couple of interesting trails of thought that I got.
That's really interesting. Thanks. I mean, I think I've come into these podcasts thinking that we're focusing on education and schools, but we're seeing so much more varied different things. So you've talked about the communities and how they understand hate crime and racism and inclusivity and how their voices are heard. And you've talked about employees in Warwickshire in different companies, and Bogdan's talked about businesses, you know, thinking about this podcast, reaching out to all sorts of different people in all different ways and their experiences. It's not just about education. It's about every strata of what people's experiences are in Warwickshire. That's really interesting. Thank you. I'm going to ask you next to have a little think about maybe, you know, it sounds a little bit doom and gloom in a way that there's so many negative things, and I don't want it to feel like that. You know, this is meant to be positive, and we're thinking about, we're raising awareness, and we're doing, you know, you're being really passionate about what you do. You know, the fact that we're all sitting here talking about this subject is a positive thing. So I'm going to ask you to pick on one transformative or positive development that you've been involved in recent times, and just give us a snapshot of that. Is that okay? If I can come to you first, Jeff.
Absolutely. So as the development of the risk profile has changed, we have had to adapt. So our training program, the offer for schools, colleagues in education, has varied. So we now provide a much more tailored prevent training support package. We develop a specific module for DSLs, available and accessible through the kind of safeguarding program. There are new e-learning packages from the Home Office, and we are providing additional guidance on the Safe in Warwickshire Prevent website that gives people a lot more information about what does a prevent concern look like, what should they do about that, what type of support is available. And then finally, I would just highlight the whole nature of online grooming has escalated in the last 3 years. And we've responded to that, I think, really positively with a range of training and support materials, not just about hate, but also enabling people to be more confident in how they use online resources.
Thanks, Jeff. Thank you. Bogdan, can you tell us one, you know, area of development or transformation that you've been involved in, please?
So we at Community Safety Team, we work with partner agencies on the Safer Workshop Partnership Board. Now, just to give you a snapshot of what the Partnership Board is, basically the Workshop Partnership Board is the county's strategic group to include partners from the police, probation, fire and rescue, and health colleagues as well, whose function is to kind of collectively drive community safety following three key strategic ambitions and priorities, which are addressing the causes of violence, tackling discrimination in all its forms, and safe, healthy, and empowered communities. Now, the board hosts two big conversations a year, and the next event and conference will focus on one of the ambitions, which is tackling discrimination in all its forms, and will take place in spring 2023. So we do encourage also schools to get involved as well. So I can leave an email address, communitysafety@workshop.gov.uk. So if anyone wants to take part in this, please do not hesitate to contact us. We have recognized as a group that obviously hate crime is underreported, and the aim of these sessions are to kind of build up on the awareness raising, increase confidence in the reporting process, and also broaden the support on offer to victims of hate crime.
Thank you. Thank you. And over to you, Delroy. Tell us a little bit about something that you've been involved in which has made a difference, has been transformative from your point of view, please.
Something that I've been heavily involved in is the with the Children and Family Academy, specifically for focusing on the newly qualified social workers, the AYSE Academy programme, which has now embedded a day full of training revolving around cultural competency and anti-racist practice for these newly qualified social workers, which has really helped them to gain an understanding and give them a space to learn about the different cultural practices that exist within other ethnic groups. And we've been able to explore conversations such as adultification and how safeguarding children from minority backgrounds should be approached and handled in a more sensitive way. It's given them an opportunity to learn from me, but not only from me, from their lived experiences of their colleagues. So it's been a hugely successful and received a lot of positive feedback from all of the newly qualified social workers that have attended.
Fantastic. Thanks ever so much. It's really important we get that training in place for everybody working with children and families. That's brilliant. Thank you ever so much. I'm just going to, you know, I'm coming to this podcast as a former head teacher. We may have head teachers or people that work in education listening to this. So I suppose the link for me is what impact, what can we do to improve safeguarding and awareness of this subject in education and schools? I'm going to open this up to the three of you really on this one, just to see, you know, if you've got any comments that you'd like to make to try and relate this to schools. Feel free to chip in.
Well, if I may, I'll start off with three challenges. I think there has been some history of lack of enthusiasm about the notion of British values within schools. However, if we take off some of the kind of connotations that people have about British values, are they British or are they not? Actually, when you're thinking about democracy, rule of law, respect and tolerance, individual liberty, if you as a school community are actually thinking about what those mean for life lived within that school, for a relationship between governors and SLTs, between staff and between staff and pupils and amongst the pupil cohort, then you start to open up an understanding of actually these things are really important to build long-term resilience. And it provides that continuity, that thread from early years right throughout their school journey. If we're start focusing on those, it's not just a curriculum. It's actually how we conduct ourselves within that school. And related to that, how can we build opportunities for people to air views, to have conversations on difficult issues? How can you promote critical thinking, recognizing that hate needs to be challenged and discussed in a constructive way where you can explore those issues, where the drivers have been coming from, and creating an online capacity to recognize, actually, am I being manipulated here? Actually critically evaluating where that information's coming from. Is it trying to steer me down a particular path? Can I get more information to balance that view? And encouraging a preparedness to look for that information. So we have resources that we are really keen for people to exploit, whether it be Educate Against Hate, Extreme Dialogue, the life or the work of former exponents or practitioners of hate crime, and getting their views introduced into schools. So I think there's a lot more we can think about in terms of opening people's mind to what are hate-based narratives trying to do, how are they constructed, and how can they be resisted?
And equally, schools are at the heart of our communities, and it reflects upon our community in terms of the area. So just to touch on the involvement of schools within the hate crime, it is important from an early age to look at hate crime and understand hate crime. If we're looking at our shoplifting offences or antisocial behaviour, most incidents are also carried out by pupils, either because they don't know that it is a hate offence. So this is what we're trying to kind of raise awareness of and improve on reporting by working closely with schools in this and involving them within our partnership.
I think also following on from those really insightful points, that schools really can play an integral role in helping a young person develop a positive self-identity, which is important to their social development. One of the things that's intrinsically linked to that is that the need for diverse representation, not so just that every child can see themselves as the hero of a story, but so that every child can understand that other kinds of children are also heroes of the story. If this type of thinking is encouraged in early years, this will really help to embed a thought process that embraces difference. It's very important for everybody involved in education to be openly curious about difference, but have compassion built into that curiosity so that we can really help build positive self identities with everybody, regardless of what their background or ethnicity is.
Thank you all for those comments, and as you said, really insightful. You know, really, education is a really important channel to get information out. Is something I'm taking away from that, to reach out to communities. At the hub of most communities is an education establishment, and that's a really important channel for getting information and raising awareness. And you know, we're also saying that trying to make sure that it's easy for us to keep doing what we've always done the same way, but to try and stand back now and again and look at how we do things, and making sure that we are thinking about those role models and the opportunities that we give to all of our students and young people, you know, being good role models, modelling our own behaviour, the way that we, you know, we take a restorative approach with each other. We have conversations. We're able to talk about subjects freely and sensitively, and to raise that awareness. And you know, if we get it right early on, the less likelihood that they're on that track for exclusion and for challenging lives ahead of them. So absolutely. We're going to come to our final question. Thank you ever so much for taking part today. I'm going to ask you to just give us something to think about as we finish our podcast, really. Any comments or anecdotes or words of encouragement or wisdom that maybe have inspired you in your career, in this week or today or recently around this subject? So we'll go back to doing it in turn. I'll come to Jeff first, if you've got anything that you want to share.
Yes, thanks, Carl. The words of Joe Cox, MP. Joe was murdered by Thomas May, June 2016. And one of the most amazing quotes she came up with, and she came up with a great many, was that we are far more united and have far more in common than that which divides us. And what strikes me when I look at those words and they're kind of replayed on countless post-its and images these days, is that, do you know what, hate-filled extremist groups, they have almost a symbiotic relationship. They need each other in order to polarize us. They need us to kind of fragment. That's what each extremist group is trying to do, trying to use one instance to play off against another. And so there's no middle ground. Actually, you're either with us or against us. And all extremist groups play that card. So what I take from Joe's words is that they're really simple but very powerful, because they reject this lie. They expose hate and bitterness related to a small number of extremists, and basically challenge every one of us who reject that to do more, to come together, to be more united, and to make sure that we inhabit that common ground, that we celebrate our united and common interests and purpose. And that's what guides, I think, the work I have in my job. And I think that's what we, all of us, will have when we come together.
Thanks, Jeff. Bogdan, can I come to you to share something from your experiences?
Yeah, I think my take on this would be, don't hate what you don't understand. This is something that we're trying to achieve in working with kids and pupils from an early age, to develop this understanding of hate crime and how to deal with hate crime. Also looking at the wording and terminologies, and have this kind of collective approach to delivering kind of this within schools. I think if we can put a pause on our lives for a minute and think about reviewing our hate crime kind of strategy, we can collectively kind of work on that. This is one of the reasons you've also been invited into our partnership, Carl, is to kind of bridge this gap and develop these processes to kind of get a better understanding of hate crime, but both from our perspective and also from members of the public perspective as well, as perception of crime is usually higher than the actual crime. And mm-hmm. This is what we're trying to kind of achieve.
Thanks for that. Just thinking about what Jeff said as well about, you know, Joe Cox, and then we've had Sir David Amis as well, haven't we, written a year ago. And so that freedom of speech and that ability to talk about subjects and to raise the narrative, Bogdan, to be able to have these conversations without fear of recrimination and hate is really important. Delroy, could you bring our session to a close with something from your experience, please?
Yeah, I thought I'd share something, and it's a question that I get asked quite a lot when I'm engaging with people and delivering training and assisting staff, is what can I do to help or to challenge racism, or whether that's institutional or systemic or individual acts of overt racism. And I think for a lot of us, challenging racism can seem like an insurmountable task. It's dominated the headlines for quite some time. A trigger point may have been the murder of George Floyd and the rise of the Black Lives Matter movement. And we've had historic problems with institutional racism in this country with the murder of Stephen Lawrence back in 1999. And it's still institutional racism. It is still a problem here. So it can seem like it's a massive task to challenge. And how can you do that in a productive way? And what I recommend to people or to individuals is to focus on effecting your own space. So you're probably thinking, what do I mean by that? And when I mean by effecting your own space, your immediate circle is who you have the most greater influence over, whether that's your family members, whether that's who you work with, your colleagues and friends and relatives. If you can display a positive attitude within your immediate circle and the space and people who you engage with, and you can influence them, that creates a ripple effect. And that's how we get societal change, when everybody takes their own individual responsibility to do their learning, to think about the way that they engage with people, to think about the language that they use and the way they interact with individuals, and do that in a positive and supportive way is a good technique that you can implement into your day-to-day activities, and is a positive step towards that cultural competency that we're striving for.
Thank you for that. And that's a perfect note which to bring our podcast to a close, that we can all make a difference. We've all got a part to play. The issues we've talked about are really challenging issues which feel insurmountable. But what you've just said there is that if each of us can take a part in being responsible and accountable and do our own bit, we can all make a difference. Can I say thank you to my guest today, to Jeff, to Bogdan and Delroy, for being my guest on this edition of In Safe Hands. Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to follow or subscribe and leave a review of the podcast. If you would like to email your feedback or suggestions, please email educationsafeguarding@warwickshire.gov.uk. That's educationsafeguarding@warwickshire.gov.uk. And I'll just say thanks again for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you all for the next podcast of In Safe Hands.
Thank you for listening. Please look out for more episodes, and don't forget to follow and subscribe to In Safe Hands, safeguarding conversations with the head teacher coach.